All right, everybody. Welcome back to Cambridge Inside Out. I'm still Robert Winters here in the dark.
And I am Sir Patrick Barrett.
In the light. There we go. All right. So let's set aside some of the sort of municipal election year stuff here. Let's talk a little bit about what's been happening over the last couple of weeks and last night in particular up at the Sullivan Chamber at Cambridge City Hall. So
little one recap thing, Monday Night Raw.
Well, we don't have to do the entire recap here. That would be a little, I mean, I do that. Actually, I'll tell you something. You know, I like to do that. People have come to expect it from me now. Last week, I just had too many things to go do. And I didn't watch the meeting. I didn't do a damn thing with it, you know, but I did put up the highlights just based on from material from the city clerk. This week, I was actually Johnny on the spot. I actually went up to City Hall. I caught the rest of it when I became incredibly bored up there. And then one of the department heads on the way out of City Hall says, "And you want to join this?" Which was funny. But I actually was, you know, typing things up as the meeting was going, and I actually had my comments and a little summary, you know, within a half hour of the meeting being over last night. So I thought it was pretty efficient. It's nice to get that out of the way. But one of the things that was introduced last week was on a subject that is near and dear to both of our little hearts, namely Central Square.
Thank you for saying I have a heart.
Yes. And you know, there were in the original version of this policy order that was before the council last week, that was made subject of the charter right by Councillor McGovern. There were a number of things having to do with sort of current conditions, but also a big emphasis on this amazing list, long and seemingly endless list of studies and recommendations that has been written around Central Square. I have had it at the bottom of my website for years and years, almost to be the thorn in the side of the city, as if to say, are you people going to do something someday? And then they seemingly do nothing. Right now they're doing a study of the assets, the city's owned assets, like parking lots and buildings and stuff, and trying to come up with a plan. We'll see where that goes.
Robert, I'm sorry to say, but that study, all that is a reverse engineering to try to find a way to get rid of Starlight. It ain't gonna work. So I appreciate the city's zeal. I appreciate they want to study yet again the same parking lots they've studied. You have all the lists on your website. But you're going to find out that the highest and best uses of those spaces have already been enumerated in multiple studies. We don't need to spend another dime on this. And Starlight right now is the highest and best use. So until the city is ready to pull the trigger on real zoning reform, which this is what this policy order was kind of about, there's not really much to be done. And the city is not going to be the one that drives it. But an amazing thing that I've been noticing in my short time here, only 15 years, we have this weird process where we study something, we come up with a list of recommendations, and then we go home. And when you ask, if you're a citizen participant, which unfortunately for me, I was for 5 years on multiple committees for Central Square, I actually thought stupidly, like, oh, we're getting it done. Only to find out afterwards that, you know, the CDD will blame the city council for not bringing it forward. The council will blame CDD for not bringing it forward. And then the two groups decide amongst themselves that it's really the manager that's stopping it all. And you're like, wait a second. Is the only way zoning reform happens in the city is if I write a citizen's petition, which is what I started doing like a decade ago? And the answer is yes. The answer is yes. That's the only way.
You know, the thing that makes it so incredibly stupid is the fact that, and I know you were part of the K2, C2 process on the C2 end of it, C2 being Central Square, K2 being Kendall Square. I forget what was somewhere around year 2013 thereabouts when it came out with the recommendations, yes. which were, I would call them pretty serious, audacious, but very thoughtful recommendations. There was no trash in there at all. No. And the committee felt so committed to what they had come up with the recommendations that they insisted, if I remember correctly, on putting in a cover letter to really emphasize that, listen, folks, we mean this.
My signature's on that. And the You know, this will be the 10th anniversary of C2. And I passed something called the Central Square Restoration Petition back in 2016, out of frustration, a desire to build a hotel, to kickstart development and rethinking of Central Square as a arts and entertainment district, not just a place to slap housing, because Central Square, there's a lot of things that can happen in Central Square that can't happen elsewhere. And I think that the real heart and soul of Central Square are places like the Middle East, Pantab Lounge, Man Ray's back, which is kind of interesting. But like our nightlife is what makes Central Square really a lot of fun. And if you put housing exclusively in an area like that, what you wind up with is like complaints and the encroachment of suburbia in what is generally an urban area.
But at the same time, just because of the principle of transit-oriented development, in and around Central Square, I think there are ways of doing the juxtaposition.
Oh, 100%. Robert, if I had this, I sent a letter to the council. I think I copied you on it because I'm that crazy. But like at the very top of it, I put that sign at the end of the expressway. If you lived here, you'd be home right now.
That's the Rappaport sign.
That, to my mind, is what's hammering in my brain when I think about C2. Had we passed C2 10 years ago, interest rates were at 4%, construction costs were sub $300 a foot, I would have 3,000 to 4,000 more units of housing in Central Square right now, and in enhanced retail, enhanced music venues, and you would not. It would not be the hellscape that the Cambridge Residents Alliance called it. It would not have been the Pearl Harbor, which isn't that inappropriate that, you know, Councillor Carlone suggested it might be. It would have been exactly what these people are talking about right now. Now they're all clapping their flippers for 12 to 15 story buildings, which is exactly the strike zone for C2. Oh, but they're 100% affordable, so they're okay. And you're like, oh my God, you
well, people, and again, I could go on and on, as could you, about all of this. But first off, let me reemphasize the notion about the building being 100% subsidized housing with deed restrictions. To me, is a really bad plan. Yeah. It just is a really bad plan, and everybody around the country knows it.
And no one's, so for Central Square, though, I think it's kind of unique where we have city-owned blocks, right? Starlight sits right now on a parking lot that you could definitely build an affordable housing tower there. No big deal. You could even build in part of Starlight on the first and second floor, or even put it on the top floor. You can do things with it. But there is no AHO project in Central Square. No one's selling their building to an affordable housing developer, and an affordable housing developer is not going to build a 15-story residential tower in Central Square, unless they're being given the land. So without a companion, so like if AHO is the 5% solution, C2 was the 95% solution, which brought everybody else together. Plus it includes an inclusionary component, which they have jacked to 20%. And I was gonna mention it earlier, but San Francisco, the North Star for all of our terrible ideas, is just reduced their inclusionary because it broke the system. They raised it to 25% and said, look at us, we're a model for the country. And they had to reduce it to 12 because guess what? It broke the system. No one built a goddamn thing.
Yeah, I completely agreed that when we jacked it to 20%, it sounded good. You could signal all that virtue, but that it was economically a stupid idea.
When does more never sound? When does saying I want give me more not sound good? I mean, I bust McGovern's chops because he said that stupid thing. I want to
squeeze.
They scream. I'm like, we don't scream. We go home. We go to Lexington. We go anywhere else because we build. We need to build. We're going to go other places. I went to Portsmouth, great town. But like the point is, and I ultimately wound up building a hotel where my background was all in residential. I would have been so happy to have built a 12-story residential building on that site, but I couldn't do it because the zoning wasn't there, the economics weren't there. And once they passed the inclusionary zoning at 20%, they made every building that's less than 80 units completely unfeasible.
All right.
So the policy order for Central Square, which was passed unanimously, so all nine of my little pals have now signed off on telling the city manager to pass every single thing that the city has ever done for Central Square. So we all know what's going to happen with this. Nothing.
But well,
it might just be Exhibit C in a document filed in the next couple months. Stay tuned.
All right, I'm going to leave a little wiggle room on that one, and maybe suggest that maybe something good will come out of it, and maybe it's worth having at least a little bit of faith, and maybe the city management and their team, now that they've had a year under their belt, that maybe they might actually get some real planners doing some planning. Honestly, I wish we could.
Silly Robert. You remind me when I was young.
Silly Wabbit. Right.
Maybe they do, right? They have a document now that says this is what the council, this is the call of the council. Go finish what you started. Go ahead.
If they could just take some of the Rasmussen Cotter aspect of CDD away temporarily, put it on ice, and actually let the many planners, many of whom are very well educated and skilled, to actually do some really great audacious planning, as opposed to just sort of towing the line. We might actually get somewhere.
They could pass the zoning that they wrote themselves that's been sitting on a shelf for 10 years. I mean, the zoning is like 80% done.
You know, the interesting thing is that I'm just going to give my political evaluation of that. When K2C2 passed, it was probably slightly premature in that the willingness for people to accept taller building, denser building just wasn't quite there yet. And that's why people like Dennis Carlone would get support, you know, and to block that. And then the CDD basically got chicken about it, and they weren't going to actually push their case anyway, even though there was a good case to be made.
Cowardice was in the air, and it was the worst possible setup. Anytime a neighborhood activist group asks me, hey, Patrick, I have a zoning petition. When should I file it? And I say, well, is it an even year or an odd year? Because if it's an odd year, you put that sucker on ice. Every time they file in an odd year, they get slammed. They're like, oh, I should have listened to you. I'm like, of course you should have. Because right. the best time to plant a zoning petition is...
Save for the fact that we are right now kind of stuck in this whole AHO mode. Yes. This would actually, you know, the willingness for a larger percentage of people to accept greater height, greater density, especially around transit. I don't think there would be any time more greater than right now to get some public support for that. But the thing is, when you're polluting the lake with this sort of notion that everything has to be 100% affordable housing, deed restricted, this and that, you've just poisoned that lake, you know, and so you're going to make everything impossible.
The best part about what C2 zoning would have done and about the legislative process for it is now, I only need to count to five. So even if the worst of the worst currently running for city council, you, the other guy, I'm just kidding. even if the worst of the worst get on the council and there's like really four terrible people, I still can count to five. In any scenario, Central Square is going to win. So the question in my mind is, will the city come back and defend their own work? Or are we going to have to get our hands dirty and do it again? And I think for my part, I'm very, very ready to go at it again. And I think a lot of people are ready for it. I think a lot of people have been talking. You talk about going into all these neighborhoods and knocking down single family houses to build triple deckers. And I'm like, no one's going to do that. Why aren't we talking about the one place where there's single story buildings next to a T-stop? Like, for some reason, we can't do that. And everyone's going to say, well, how does this compete with the AHO? And I'm going to say, the AHO is never in competition. So like, if you want the AHO to do anything, then you should upzone the city lots and build on those, because those are the only sites you got. The rest of that stuff's going to have to be done by private development. And it might have the magic power of pushing some of these, you know, sort of stuck in the mud, multi-generational landlords. You know, maybe it's more than just about, you know, giving developers a swell of money. Maybe it's about really changing the culture and changing some of the trajectories of Central Square.
You know, there's one challenge that when we were looking at some of the whole, you know, the study that's supposedly going on right now about cities' assets. Yeah. I hate that word in this case, but I guess it's accurate. And I kept bringing up this notion about, well, you know, if you only look, if you're going to try and do planning based exclusively on what the city owns and controls, you're blowing a lot of good opportunities here. And I'm going to specifically, I don't want to go, you know, too much into one example here, but, you know, the big buildings over at the corner of Prospect have as their accessory parking, those Yes. gigantic lots on Prospect Street, which is the biggest dead zone in and around Central Square. The city took by eminent domain, Vail Court properties. And I know they have some plan for some, I'm sure, virtuous plan for what might happen there, but it's usually just the usual, right? You know, there are opportunities here, at least for the moment, for some really big, audacious things you could do, right? You know, yeah, really kind of redefining Central Square if you worked in conjunction, do the planning in conjunction with some of those other private property owners to try and get something that lifts all boats. But so, getting people to get out of their little silos is tough.
It is tough. I mean, I remember when that property presented a 90-unit project ages ago. It kind of just evaporated. And then they went after Vail Court. And I remember talking to Henrietta Davis at the time, who I think hates my guts, but maybe that's why she couldn't hear what I was saying. But I said, this is the time. Go and make friends with Intercontinental, who owns these lots. We know the people. We can help make the connections. Let's get a public-private partnership going. That's almost 2 acres of land. Oh my God, in Central Square, a block from a T, you could build 400 units of housing there, let alone that it's the stupid 90 they presented. You could probably even get a massive affordability component to it, but public-private.
You could get ground floor retail that would actually help redefine that entire block.
The retail. I mean, right now, at the time, we were using it for what we call the central flea, where we had our flea markets and taco trucks and things like that would park in there. People loved it, and Intercontinental was very gracious to allow us to use it. But now they don't let anyone use those parking lots unless the bid really asks nicely because of insurance reasons and a whole other host of reasons. But there you have a lot, even across the street, these massive lots. And that's what gets me just bakes my bread when we're talking about the AHO or housing. I'm like, guys, fix your house. I don't want to talk about the AHO. I don't want to talk about building in West Cambridge or in Res B, Res A areas. I want to talk about building where I can actually build right now today, where there's actual land, not things already on it. Or where there's a single story building next to a T-stop that I could level tomorrow and no one would shed a tear. And then introduce hundreds, thousands of people into the heart of the Central Square Cultural District and revitalize the entire district with people, the people they say they want. But the problem is always with Cambridge. It's not the right people. It's not, we want the affordable. No, we don't, you know, I'm uncomfortable with people living in houses that I haven't approved. And I'm like, what do you really want?
Right. You know, I mean, sometimes I think we are still suffering from this sort of this illness that I remember that was sort of the lingering 60s-esque sort of anti-capitalist, keep everything decommodified and the notion that anything should actually have economic value is somehow a bad thing, you know, and if anybody of any means would move in, that's something we absolutely must fight tooth and nail. You know,
meanwhile, Robert, houses in my neighborhood are selling at $1,000 a foot. A house just down the street from me listed at $2 million, sold for $3 million, and it's less than 3,000 square feet. And it's a renovation. It's on one of these side streets. And I'm scratching my head, going, "Who the hell bought that? And how? And why?" But look online right now. They're snapping them up. So like, we have made, for all those protests, for all those people blocking projects, for all those people blocking zoning and then cheering the demise of C2, you made me a very wealthy man just in my house. And I'm sorry that supply and demand economics are real, but if you weren't paying attention during the pandemic and didn't see a real live fire drill of that, then I can't help you. And there's nothing that's going to convince you.
I think that's about right. You know. Anyway, another thing that happened. By the way, Patrick, I think maybe at some point a handful of us, completely independent of what the city's doing, whatever, should just basically get together with a bunch of magic markers and sheets of paper and draw the central square we want. Say, now make it happen. I don't care how, but make it happen.
I agree.
You know, maybe that's what we do. We should have our own little charrette.
and I dump on CDD a lot, but there are a lot of really talented kids that work there.
That is absolutely true. And I wish we could just unleash that talent rather than constrain it all the time.
When you do this kind of work, either you do it on my side of the fence or you do it on their side of the fence. We're doing the same work. And they have just as much passion as I do. They sketch zoning and doodle planning for areas, I'm sure, on the weekends in their own homes. I do. And it's like, you know, if you unleash that creativity, you're going to get a much, much better result than if you just try to keep telling them like, no, we're not doing it. Oh, we're going to do something else. Oh, we're going to Alewife. Oh my God. Like, and it's just like, you know, and that's why eventually, inevitably, the kids that go to CDD and start rising in the ranks go somewhere else where their talents will be used.
Actually, I'll throw one more example, which is also intertwines with the whole AHO discussion that's been happening, which is unfortunately happening. You know, I mean, I was part of this Envision Cambridge where when we were working with a bunch of real planners, you know, both within CD and outside with Util Company. And then we talked about, you know, ways of sort of making things a little more bulky along some of the corridors. Well, guess what? All of that just gets dropped until it gets reintroduced in a completely bastardized way as part of AHO 2.0, where instead of talking about, you know, having, you know, 5 and 6 story buildings and with greater frequencies along all these corridors, they turned it into like, let's have 12 and 13 stories subsidized housing only. And I thought, well, okay, why don't you just take most of Envision and just rip it up? Because that's not what Envision was calling for. And by the way, and I could show you the graphs for it, the great housing, Envision housing goals, which were basically came out of thin air at the last housing working group that I was at, right? The goals that we are supposedly not meeting right now were not what CDD or any of the consultants had been presenting all along until one very last meeting, where some interested parties, namely some of those developers, basically said, no, let's make it 25% rather than the 17.5% that they had been talking about all up to that point. I mean, what a farce.
But there's also the 12,500 units they wanted to build before 2030. And like everyone's talking about the 3,000 and change of affordable, but they're not talking about like the 9,000 remainder or the 8,000 something remainder that that's market rate.
Well, let's be clear about it. That 12,500, actually, I even have the graph sitting here right now. But the thing is that, you know, when they were producing those graphs here, those additional 12,300 units here were going to be built because it was a presumption that they would be built by private development. And the goal was to make sure that we maintained our percentage of affordability amongst the new stuff. Somehow we said, let's just throw away all the market stuff and we'll just impose the affordability part of this here. It's a complete misreading of everything.
Well, it's when you have a job where there is no consequence for achieving any metric of success, when your goals are not defined, and when you simply are able to outsource your thought process really to consultants who you can then point to the finger and say, well, you know, they didn't quite get it, or we had to step in and correct them, or they were speaking off message. You know, it's no wonder why we're sitting on 4 decades of central square study with no action. It's no wonder why Envision passed and there was no action. You know, people, you know, eventually get frustrated and move on, but if you're an activist, a citizen, and you follow this, you have to start questioning why we're a $1 billion city. How is it that we're spending all of this money? What are we spending our money on? What are these people actually doing? And why are we paying ungodly salaries for no work product and no means to judge that work product?
Well, I'm not going to argue with that. I think it's correct. So, you know, I remain optimistic, by the way, through it all. But it is, you know, again, getting back to the, you know, the dual roles of being a candidate, to listen to some of the, you know, what's coming out of some mouths along the road here is, it's a little wild, let's just say that, you know. We are allowing the politics to completely wash away the planning, mm-hmm. and it's a shame. I just think it's a terrible shame. Anyway, we're only down to the last couple of minutes here. One thing I thought, just, you know, completely unrelated matter, but it was kind of entertaining, was how last week at City Council, there was also an order wanting to make sure that the city did not in any way, anyhow, anytime, ever cooperate with Cop City in Atlanta, yeah. right? And that was made subject to the charter, right? And then it was brought back for the council meeting last night. And they, you know, they just removed one tiny, tiny little phrase out of it to make it a little less specific. But it was sort of like the good old days. It was sort of where you have people, you know, basically phoning in. The good old days of 2020, where people were phoning in from far away in order to, you know, couch all of this anti-police rhetoric purely in terms of deforestation. I loved it. What a bunch of BS.
That's the Quentin and Friends. Defund the police ad infinitum. I'm grateful to Nadine Simmons, who, you know, jumped on that grenade a little bit. But, you know, at some point in time, counselors, you're gonna have to stand for something. And the more you know, there'll be other people like Quentin who keep coming and keep throwing grenades at you. And while you get mad at me for throwing you all under the bus, I do so because one person doesn't run the council. It takes a village. And if you guys don't stand up for your police in Cambridge, who are like, I mean, it's just, you can't compare them to anything on a national level. Like,
we're down to our last 10 seconds. So I'm just going to say that I agree with you completely. I think we're pretty good with our police force here. Thank you. Anyway, we'll see you soon on Cambridge Inside Out.